shit, it's a members only episode. What's up, Rob? How you feeling today?
I'm well. How are you, my friend?
Good, good. Ready to go to Chicago.
A lot of debate this week. You take down all sorts of people on the internet?
Oh, I don't even know what's going on. Fucking...
You're making the rounds, buddy.
Well, I've been arguing with libertarians now.
Oh, I saw that. Your tweet made me laugh so hard when you're like, just your usage of retarded. It's amazing how like words like gay, retarded come. They're meaningless to most people, but in a good enough comics hand, it can still make me laugh. And I read your response. I just started cracking up. I was like, oh, that's perfect usage. 10 out of 10.
Well, thank you. Well, they're just, I don't know, man. It's all of it, by the way, is both the Libertarian Party, the official Libertarian Party Twitter handle, started like talking shit to me. And then what happens is then I get messages from like all these people at the Libertarian Party, like, dude, I'm so sorry we took the tweet down. It's not a thing. It's not that. And it's almost like on some level, I was on with Jacob Winograd last night and we talked a bit about this, but on some level, you're like, guys, if you want to be a professional organization, like, you got to move as one here. You're either talking shit to me or you're my friends who delete the tweet the next day. In some weird way, that is actually the worst of all worlds. The worst of all worlds is for the Libertarian Party to like take a stand against one of the most prominent libertarians in the country, then delete it. So now you like it, that looks worse than just taking a stand against me. And I will tell you, Rob, I don't know. We didn't talk about this, I don't think, right? I think I did the show. Did we talk about this on the last episode? I can't remember, man.
I wasn't on yesterday's episode.
Oh, right. So me and you, that's right. I'm sorry. I literally, dude, it's a problem is that number one, I'm becoming an old man and in my 40s, I just do not have as good a memory as I used to. And it's whatever. Yeah, I guess you gain a little bit of wisdom, but you lose a little bit of the quick draw. Like just, I used to like remember shit I had read in books and now I'm like, got to go back and reread the book, whatever. But then also, I talk about this stuff so much. And I talk to so many different people and I talk to so many different, that it's just impossible to remember, like, did I say that on the show? Did I say that on the phone? Did I say that to my wife? Did I say that to you? That me and you also talk all the time, not on the show. Anyway, really I'm struggling keeping all the details together. But so I was on with Sneeko on his stream. And he had asked me to jump on with this Professor Yang guy. Jiang, I might be saying this wrong. I apologize. Chinese guy. And so me and him, we talked for like, I don't know, like an hour and a half or something like that. I thought it was a good discussion. I liked the guy. He really didn't push back on anything I said. We just kind of went back and forth and we're talking. And so at one point, Sneeko goes like, he goes, dude, what, Dave, what do you think we even do now? What do we just vote for the left? I mean, geez, Mamdani, I guess, is better than Donald Trump if he's at least against the genocide or whatever, all this. And I was like, and I said something like, really, this is not an exaggeration. So this is the clip. The clip is me going, well, I was like, look, there is an argument that the best thing right now would be if the Democrats win the midterms, right? There's a pretty strong argument for that because, like, there's got to be some punishment for the Trump administration just totally abandoning, you know, all of its supporters. But I said, I'm never going to vote. I won't vote for the Democrats in the midterms because I just can't get the stink of Democrat on me. Like, I'm just too furious about the last 15 years to support a goddamn Democrat. Like, even I didn't say this in the clip, but even like Ro Khanna or something like that, dude, I'm so furious about the last 15 years. I just don't think I can vote to someone with a D next to their name. But I said, I'm not going to vote for them. And I go, I still feel like I just have the stench of Donald Trump on me. And I'm probably never going to vote for a major party candidate again, unless like Thomas Massie runs or something like that. That was the statement. So that's what's in the clip. Then right after the clip, we just trashed the Democrats for like 20 minutes, then went through the whole goddamn history of what they've done over the last 15 years. Like, I mean, we hit all the hits you could think of from, sabotaging the primary against Bernie Sanders and cheating him out of the primary twice in a row, to framing Donald Trump for treason, to trying to interfere in the 2020 election, to the Twitter files and the censorship and the border and the misinformation. I mean, we hit everything, just trashed the Democrats. And then somehow the reaction of Jeremy Kaufman and the New Hampshire Libertarian Party and the Libertarian Party official account is, Dave's saying you should support the Democrats. Like, it's just the most retarded thing I've ever seen in my life. I've never met a group of people quite like libertarians who just, like, self-sabotage over nothing. Like, there's not even a controversy here. Like, I respect it more when the open borders libertarians are like, Dave's a bad man because he's for closed borders. Because at least there's an issue that they're fighting over. They're fighting now. You're going after, I don't know, the, you know, like, fifth or sixth most prominent libertarian in the country for saying there's an argument that the Democrat, that divided government is better than unified government. That's the big thing. I don't know. So it's, but at least those other guys don't tweet it and then delete the tweet. Just looks so awful. It's sad to me, man. The libertarians, it's really the thing that prevents me from, like, getting way back on board with the Libertarian Party. Because, Rob, at this point, why not? I don't know. I'm disgusted by the two major parties. I could see if there was something cool going on with the Libertarian Party wanting to be involved again. But it's just the people, man. Like, there's just, it's the people are so, and again, I'm not trying to paint with a broad brush. There's great people. There's people I really love in the Libertarian Party. But man, it just feels like it's always a fight about every little thing, even the most irrelevant. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's hard to make an argument that when someone says you can make an argument, that that's actually specifically their opinion, and now you have to argue with them on it. I mean, firstly, it also is a reasonable point if you said, if you had made the statement, I believe at this point we need to be so anti-war, we should be going, I wouldn't agree with you that we should go out and support Democrats, but it'd still be a reasonable approach.
Yeah, it's not the craziest thing.
If we were taking on another show who had said that, I would go, I get where they're coming from. Here's why I'm not going to take that personal course of action, but they've made a good point. But when you start with, you can make an argument, and then you say something that's actually a reasonable argument to make, to then say that that's your opinion and what you're advocating for, is that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's right, exactly. And then also, just again, because there is a thing, I said this on Jacob's show last night, but it's worth repeating, because I do think there is this thing that and this is what people, I think, sometimes playfully call autistic, although I don't think autistic is actually the technical correct definition, but there is this level of binary thinking that consumes so many libertarians. I mean, I guess this consumes people in general, but, like, so I remember one time I just saw this lady, like, it was just some lady made this video about me. You know, sometimes, like, lost Rob. Oh, I guess that's what happens. Hey, Natalie, that was Rob that dipped out, right? Not me. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I should mention, if you have questions, put them in the chat. We'll try to get to some questions today. And thanks to all of you guys for subscribing. Natalie, if you see any questions, feel free to go copy them and put them here in this chat. I'll look through now while we're waiting for Rob to get back. Rob bailed. Rob just, that's just really funny to me. Like, that was it. That was the way we find out that Rob bailed. He just went, dude, I'm over Dave's horse shit, man. I mean, what the fuck is this? Like, I don't know. He wasn't in Chicago that weekend, and he never came back on the show. That was it.
I pressed the wrong button like an idiot, but
people in the chat can make me laugh. So there's you know, just sometimes, whatever, though, there might be someone like, there's probably a million things people tag me in on social media that I never see, but then every now and then I'll see it. It just happens to be what I see. So I just happen to see this woman. She made a video. It's like got like 20 something views or whatever. You know, it's, I don't know who she is, or never seen her again. But she made this video, if you remember, Rob, after the last, I believe it was after the 24 Libertarian Party convention. And I was talking about how there was a man in a thong who came up to try to argue immigration with me. And, like, there's this dude, like, he's in some crazy outfit with, like, in, like, what do you call it? Like, it reminded me of, what was the thing? Speedos. That's what I meant to say. The Speedo, like underwear, but, like, ass out, like, thong in some bird costume. I forget exactly what it was. But He's in this ridiculous costume. He comes over to me and he goes, Dave Smith, I'd like to talk to you about your views on immigration. And I went, oh, dude, you know, I just did a whole podcast with Bob Murphy, 2 hours, all on the topic of immigration. If you're interested, go check it out. And he goes, no, I'd like a dialogue. And I was like, sorry, buddy, but like, yeah, I gotta go. Like, and then I was just talking about it on the show because, like, look, there's just something to it where you go, like, dude, how? I just don't understand the mentality of someone even being like, dude, you can't. No, I'm not like getting into a policy debate with a man in a thong. This is too ridiculous. And so this woman makes this video about me, and this is what I mean about the binary thinking. And she goes, you know, Dave's gonna sit here and tell this guy that he can't wear a thong or whatever, but Dave's wearing a hoodie and he's cursing and he's a shit talking comedian and he's talking about serious matters. So like, you're not in a suit and tie. Who are you to tell this guy? And you're like, yeah, man, but the thing is, like, not everything's a binary, you know? Like, not everything's, like, either 100% this way or 100% this way. Like, yes, it's true. I'm not a suit and tie guy. I'm not an academic. I curse a lot, you know, whatever. I'm still able to, like, go on a big platform and present ideas in a way that's serious to the ideas, that someone might listen to that and go, oh, that was a good point. Like, anyway... So this is the type of shit you struggle with when you work at the Libertarian Party. Like, I have to make an argument over why you can't really expect to go make an argument as a dude in a thong and be taken seriously. And like, this is what is just such a given to every other human being has to be explained to Libertarian. Like, how about this most basic point, dude? Because if you remember, I tried to take over the Libertarian Party Twitter for a little bit. Never was able to. I was able to take over the goddamn party and couldn't take over the Twitter. But they insisted that it be like a team of people, which was the worst. Should have just given it to me. I'm the best at libertarian messaging. I don't know. I don't do anything else. Just let me do what I do. But even when I was kind of in charge of the Twitter for a little bit there, or me and some other people, but they were all kind of like, dude, it was good dudes. Like Dave Benner was one of the guys on it. I can't remember who else. But even then, I would never have from the official party Twitter attacked Gary Johnson or Bill Weld or Spike Cohen or Justin Amash or Thomas Massey or anyone like that. Because like, I would just recognize like, yo, this isn't my Twitter. Like I can't just talk shit to someone from here. Like I could go talk shit to someone from my personal account if I want to, but like, this is the official Libertarian Party, the third biggest political party in the United States of America's official statements channel. You know, like, what are you doing? What are you even getting involved in any of this shit for? It's just totally unprofessional. And I don't know. It is a shame in a way, because the story of the Libertarian Party is just always like, there's a big opportunity here. It's a moment where people really hate both political parties. Like you would think there'd be some ability to like, hey, let's try to get some momentum going here. More voters are not Republicans or Democrats than are. The third party should be killing it right now. Whatever. What can you say, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, what a moment to talk about, hey, we'll bring down inflation and make sure that there are no wars. And to be infighting over the best tact for standing against these wars, including making the argument that you could support Democrats right now because of how bad the Republican Party is, really seems like a missed opportunity. Similar to the missed opportunity Rand Paul just had. And that he, I guess flirted with or made a declaration of thinking about running for president. And he's been right on the biggest issues the last couple of years, government spending, these wars, COVID. And he could just run on his track record of, hey, I'm going to push back against government overreach, which is ruining your life, driving up costs, getting us into these wars and taking away your medical freedom. But instead, he decided to talk about big business getting together with whatever. It's just that these guys don't realize you're in the most favorable climate for our ideas, probably in American history, which is, hey, we're against corruption and we're for your freedom. Just brand a message around that.
I mean, I'm really glad you brought that up because I haven't talked about it publicly and I hesitate to talk about it on the public show, but like on the members only might be almost like the perfect area to talk about. So I was furious over this, right? So for people who don't know what Rob's talking about. If you think even what Rob just said is exact, Rob is not even doing it justice how awful the Rand Paul presidential campaign, not exactly launch, but feeler, where Rand Paul comes out and goes, I'm 50-50 about whether I'm going to run for president. And then he basically, he said at one point, he goes, well, you know, there used to be a libertarian wing in the Republican Party, but there's not really one anymore. And there should be a libertarian wing who stands up and says, hey, we're against the tariffs. We're for free trade. And, you know, I think that's something that the Chamber of Commerce could get on board with. And you're like, yo, dude, that's your pitch right now? That's your pitch. Big business likes free trade. That's your pitch. I just don't even know what to say. With the backdrop of everything that's going on, and I'll tell you, at first, my first reaction to it was, and I got on the phone with some people, and look, I feel a little bit weird talking about Rand Paul because I just...
He's the second best we got.
Yeah, well, he's the second best we got, but it's also that he's Ron Paul's son. He's the greatest living American hero's child. And Ron Paul is, you know, genuinely like such a hero to me, has been such a great, incredibly generous person to me personally. And I love him. I love Dan McAdams. I love all the people around them. I met his granddaughter. I don't even know if I met Rand's daughter. I know it was Ron Paul's granddaughter, but maybe from one of the other kids. He's got like five kids. But anyway, she was like the sweetest person ever. I love all of Rand Paul's wife likes all my stuff on Twitter, and we've messaged a couple times. And like, I think she's like really cool. And so it's just like a weird thing where it's like, I don't want to be. So my first reaction is I'm on the phone with a bunch of people just flipping out about this. And I'm like, look, man, I'm at the place right now. I think I could get a meeting with Rand Paul. Let me just get in front of Rand Paul for 30 minutes. Just because, like, isn't it just so obvious to go, Dr. Paul, like, here's the thing. If you want to run for president, you could win, but here's what you have to say. Forget about tariffs. I mean, you want to be against tariffs. Great. You're for free trade, but that is like the 17th most important thing right now. You are against the wars, the foreign aid, the corruption in D.C., the Epstein cover-up, and the debt and the currency destruction. You speak for the people on behalf of the deep criminal corruption in Washington, D.C. This is your campaign, dude. And you're Rand Paul, so people can believe it when you say it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ted Cruz wants to come out and say drain the swamp, but we all know Ted Cruz ain't draining nothing. Like, you, okay? But then I had this thought, and it just completely killed all my motivation to even want to try. And that's that if he doesn't get that already, then he just can't do it. Like what you say, you still don't understand the moment you're living in so badly, but I'm going to explain it to you and that's going to fix everything. I don't think so, man. You know, I remember the moment when Rand Paul, it was at the first debate in 2016, when they ask the entire, this is if you can remember in the 2016 primary, there's like 13 Republican candidates. Donald Trump has just jumped in the race and he's winning in the polls. And everyone's like, what the fuck is going on? But most people at this point are still thinking, yeah, Donald Trump's going to be number one in the polls for a couple months. He'll drop out. He'll write a book about it. He'll go make another $100 million. And then we'll get down to the serious business of nominating Jeb Bush for, you know, president. And then, so the first question is a question to everyone. It's a yes or no, raise your hand question to all 13 candidates, but it's a question to Donald Trump. So they go, will you all right now pledge to support the Republican nominee no matter who it is? And so the question was essentially to Donald Trump, hey, will you promise right now that when you lose and step aside, you will cut a check to Jeb Bush and endorse him and send the supporters you have to him? Everyone raises their hand except for Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the only one that stands there with balls and goes, now, Rand Paul interrupts. It wasn't even his time. He interrupts to go, excuse me, to the moderator. He pulls a teacher. And he goes, did anyone notice that Donald Trump did not raise his hand? And so maybe that's his plan. Maybe he's going to end up supporting Hillary Clinton. He hasn't pledged to support the Republicans no matter who they are. And like, I remember just looking at this, like my insides fell to the floor as I was watching it, because it was just like the calculation. And I like Rand Paul a lot. He's an excellent senator. He's been great on a whole lot of issues. Not as good as his dad, but really, really good. But it's like you thought that was the moment that you were living in. First of all, Rand Paul has his hand up in the air, pledging to support the nominee no matter who it is, while Lindsey Graham is on the stage. Jeb Bush is on the stage. Marco Rubio is on the stage. You know, Chris Christie's on the stage. Like some of the worst people in the world. So now he's pledging he'll support the establishment no matter what, and he's ratting out Donald Trump for having the position of, I won't support the establishment no matter what. Yeah, that's where the country's at. The whole reason why Donald Trump was in first place was because he was the most anti-establishment candidate there. And it would have been so obvious. Like, it would have been so easy. Imagine, just run the counterfactual that Rand Paul and Donald Trump are the only ones who don't raise their hands. And then Rand Paul, it comes to Rand Paul, and he goes, look, this is all a joke. The only two people who have a chance to be the nominee here are me and Donald Trump. And, you know, Jeb Bush. Yeah, right. You think anyone with the last name Bush is ever going to be president in this country again after what your brother did? This is a joke. I'm Ron Paul's kid. Here's what we're going to do. We're ending every last one of these wars. We're auditing the Federal Reserve for the first time in American history. We're auditing Fort Knox. We're getting to the bottom of this corrupt government and figuring out what's going to... I mean, one thing like that, dude. Whatever. Me and you could, you know, workshop this a million times. If I put you on the spot right now, gun to your head, you could do a great... And dude, it would have been a race between Rand Paul and Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump probably would have still beaten Rand Paul. So much fame, so brash, so hard to deal with. But Rand Paul would have made a mark, you know? And to just see all these years later, 10 years later, and he's flirting about running for president, and this is still what he's coming with... While your boy Thomas Massey is right there, just pick up the phone. Talk to Thomas Massey. He'll tell you what to say, man. Like, it's almost like what Rand Paul always seemed to have this attitude that, well, look, if you just moderate on the message a little bit and moderate on the policy a little bit, that you could get all the radical, you know, anti-government types. And then you could get the establishment to, like, all kind of come together, you know? It's like he won't really criticize Israel that hard. He won't really criticize AIPAC that hard because he's like, well, I don't want to go to war with them. I want to keep. But the thing about it is, dude, is that if you were ever running for president, if you were ever doing good, they'll slit your throat. They're going to do everything they can to crush you. And since you're not being principled on the messaging and principled on the policy, you're not getting the support from the people either. So it's just the worst of all strategies, you know?
Yep, it was infuriating. And the Libertarian Party is whatever. I'm not that interested in real party politics anyways.
Yeah, no, I agree with you too. I'm much more interested in issues than I am in, you know, getting involved in politics.
But anyway, I agree with your dream. It would be nice if the Libertarian Party was cooking and super cool so that you didn't have to run it, but you could support it.
Yep, that would be nice. That would be nice. What do we got? A question here for Dave. What do you think about a nationwide campaign for no confidence during midterms? Is that even a thing? I don't know. I suppose you could write in no confidence. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Again, like Rob kind of just said, I'm not a political strategist, you know? I don't know what exactly the right move is.
Just write in no.
I'll be not voting. Which I feel like is kind of, in a sense, a vote of not confidence.
Maybe I'll run that campaign. Just write in boo.
That's not bad. See, yeah. Boo. And then there is some guy named Boo.
Named Boo.
And he's just like, yeah, I was elected. And in every I'm your president state. Now. And somehow he has John McCain's foreign policy. It's just, they always, somehow it just always gets back to John McCain being your leader. Question for Dave. I know you have said the America First Coalition can still be picked up by someone, but can someone like Massey really do it? Like the establishment and MAGA base, Would they still support him after how much they've turned on him? Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. Like, someone like Thomas Massey has just gone to war with Donald Trump. And that's not the best situation to be in if you're trying to be the Republican nominee, because Donald Trump is still pretty popular in the Republican Party. And there's still a lot of people there that now you've been branded the worst congressman in the world by the president. Massey, you know, the truth is that Thomas Massey is incredible. He's an excellent congressman. He'd have my full support if he was running for president. I don't know that that's what he's supposed to do, though. And I don't know if he exactly is the best guy for that, you know, for that role. I think that, you know, I think in the Republican primary in 2028, which is still a long way away, but I think a message like Thomas Massey, I think he'd have a real shot. I'll say that. I think right now, if Thomas Massey, let's just say there was the campaign going on right now and Thomas Massey was committed to it. And let's say he's running J.D. Vance versus Thomas Massey, or Marco Rubio versus Thomas Massey, or what would really favor Thomas Massey is J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio against Thomas Massey. I think there's a real strong likelihood that Massey could win that. If he was going hard in the paint, I think there's a really good chance he could win it. Now, I don't know. I could be wrong about that, but we'll see. You know, a lot of states, I don't have the exact split of this off the top of my head, but a lot of states let independents vote too, you know? Some states even let Democrats vote in Republican primaries. So, you know, I think this administration is very unpopular, especially once you get outside the narrow MAGA Republican, you know, world. All right, you want to go to one of these clips? So this was pretty funny, man. There's J.D. Vance went and... Oh, I guess maybe I should say there were a couple pieces of news we could just talk about real quick. I don't really have that much to say about it, but Donald Trump did announce a ceasefire with Israel and Lebanon. I don't know, Rob, you know, these ceasefires, like we keep talking about, they don't really mean what traditionally people meant by the word ceasefire. And so I just don't know it's like, we'll see. I don't know. Do you have anything else to say on that? We'll see.
I didn't quite see that, but here's my best guess for what's going to take place now with Iran. Firstly, I guess the Lebanon ceasefire will come down to it's a ceasefire, but people can't return type deal. And then that will go back to military action pretty quickly. I think on the Iranian front, I think it comes down to, I think how many missiles Iran actually has left, because either both sides would rather just play the economic waiting game right now, where I guess the escalation will be that Iran shuts down the Red Sea, and now we want to see who can sustain economic destruction for longer. Is it that Iran's in such a bad place because they can't even get the oil money in, that they finally cave and come to the table with better terms? Or does an economic global depression, gas prices go up in the United States of America, tempt one of the two sides to actually go back to a military escalation? The only question is, if Iran has so much firepower at the moment that it would rather not play that waiting game with the United States of America. Like, in other words, if we're only sitting on like 1,000 missiles, they might be like, yeah, we're better off taking the economic route because we're going to blow through our stockpile. But if they're very well supplied, they might just be like, all right, there's no reason for us to go through economic devastation for three months for it just to get back to the military action. Let's go with the military escalation and make this. It's going to be bad for us because they're probably going to come for our civilian infrastructure, but we're going to take out other civilian infrastructure. And hopefully that's enough devastation that we can actually get the better terms. So that's kind of my snapshot view at the moment. In terms of a Lebanon ceasefire, my guess is that the Israelis worked in enough sneakies that it will not be sustainable, or that they'll continue some military engagement and say that it's in line with their new definition of a ceasefire. But I guess, you know, remains to be seen.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with all of that. So yeah, I think that's about right. Did you see? So I did find the J.D. Vance stuff very interesting. I thought was worth talking about.
Dude's not a draw. That's all you can say.
Well, look, man, it's not there. It's really hard. Again, I'm not saying like this is conclusive scientific proof or anything like that. But it really does vindicate a lot of the stuff we've been saying here, just about like what a tough position we're in. Now, I don't know exactly what happened here, but they seemingly booked like a 30,000 seat, like a stadium, and it's maybe 25% full. So already the optics of that are like not tremendous. And this is a turning point event. And J.D. Vance is getting like heckled from the crowd with people yelling like you support genocide and like all that. Like, dude, that is some, you know, as I always say that I love that Simon and Garfunkel lyric. I always thought that was beautiful where they say the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls and tenement halls. I think there's something interesting about, like, you know, I know some people go, social media isn't real life. It's like, yeah, but also kind of, it's kind of the subway walls. Like, I don't know. It's like you're telling me like this is an interesting gauge of the country, even at a turning point event. Like, I'm just saying, like, I want you to think, Rob, for a second of what Donald Trump in 2024, as he's running for president, or Donald Trump in 2016, as he's running for president, goes to a Turning Point USA event. It'd be like rock star status. Just, yo, this is your home base. These are the people who are the most energized. Your grass, I guess 2016, I guess Turning Point wasn't really like what it is today if it was around then, but so CPAC back then or whatever. But like, that's what this should be. This should be just the cheering and you're joking around and you're having fun and you're giving your taglines and they're like, hell yeah. And here at his own base, it's like empty and hostile. And his, when he's getting things, like, he doesn't really have a response to the hostile nature of the whole thing. And like, what can he say? Oh, you guys supported a genocide. Yeah, but then it stopped. Like, okay. So I don't know. To me, I look at things like that and I go, oh, that is something to make a big deal out of. Like, this is really, like I said, man, this administration has put themselves in a terrible situation here. And I don't know how any of these guys' political careers stay alive.
Yeah, I think the lack of people in attendance really mostly tells the full story. And the fact that there wasn't enough decorum in the room, that, you know, part of the propaganda is that you never have to actually field the questions of dissent. When you're taking news shows, they're not asking you, hey, why are you killing babies? Why do you support a genocide? You never really have to field those tough questions that put those things out into reality. So the fact that he's at a Turning Point USA event, there's low attendance, and amongst the low attendees, they can't, you know, control the room for him not to have to field those kind of questions. He's just not that interesting, captivating, and doesn't have a chance. And really showcases the downturn of Turning Point USA without Charlie Kirk.
Yeah. Well, I also, you know, it's also a little bit obvious that, and I think I had a clip on, because I had the Ben Shapiro one, which we could play later, but like, maybe it makes more sense to save this point, but I'll just say it. But like, there's this thing where, got like, J.D. Vance kind of tried to fill this lane of being the one who's like, no, he's pretty sympathetic to like our foreign policy. Like, that's kind of been his thing. Yeah, the terror wars were too much and we really shouldn't do that. He was pretty solid on Ukraine for all those years. And like, it's like the tightrope that he's trying to walk now, it's just an impossible tightrope to walk. It's like going like, it's like, oh, I'm the guy who like, no, I like Tucker Carlson and Mark Levin. No, you don't. No one does. You like one or you like the other at this point. That's just where we are. And believe me, it's a funny thing because, much like I said with the Rand Paul, you know, there's times in life where you can, the compromise position actually loses everything. And you actually have to take a position that might cost you something. But so for guys like me and you, even if a J.D. Vance or someone like that says some things that are a little bit better than what Rubio or Trump are saying, we're like, dude, we see through you. You're part of this administration. You're doing business with the warfare state. Like, you're just not, you're getting none of our support. But also, it should be pointed out that Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro and all those guys will not support J.D. Vance unless he disowns Tucker Carlson. They're all furious about it. So it's like you're losing both sides by trying to meet in the middle, because this is just too... I've watched it over the last 2.5 years, man. A lot of people, particularly on the right, a lot of people have tried, but some on the left too, but a lot of people have tried to be like, look, I'm just not going to take a position on Israel. How about that? It's really sad when you see the non-interventionist types try to do it. It's like, look, I'm a non-interventionist, so I don't take a position on Israel. I care about America. It's like, oh, okay. So you care about American wealth staying in America. Okay, well, it's not right now, you know? So, like, we kind of got to deal with that part first. But there's just, to me, it seems like there's no not taking a position on all this shit. And I thought that was true before the war in Iran. Certainly true now. Okay, so here, let's go with the clip of, Tucker Carlson's texting me. I'm not trying to brag. I texted him this morning about, he called out Patrick Bet-David and them for talking about how Catholics hate Jews or whatever. And I told him, I was like, my Catholic wife really enjoyed that segment. She was unaware that she hates Jews. I was like, she was really shocked to find out. Turns out she hates. All right, so here, let's go to the J.D. Vance is confronted by a Turning Point USA audience member. Because again, this is the vice president on what should be his home turf.
Like the administration that solved the problem, but the president. Excuse me, sir. Right now, you see more humanitarian aid coming into Gaza than it has any time in the past 5 years, because we have taken that situation seriously. And that's one of the things that I'm proud of about our administration, is whether it's...
So it's funny, as he says this, I swear, the day this happened, right? I believe this was yesterday. The day it happened, in that morning, I was reading all about the goddamn humanitarian crisis going on in Gaza, because not enough aid is getting through. And not nearly as much as was agreed to in the ceasefire is coming through. And I don't know, you know, I don't know. He says it's the most aid that's been getting in there in the last 5 years. And I don't, that might be right. It's certainly more than was getting in last year at this time. I'm not sure if it's the most in 5 years, but if it's the most in 5 years, like, why is that? Oh yeah, because there's been an Israeli blockade around Gaza for all of that time with full US support funded by the US. And then he's also not going to mention, like, okay, the aid that's getting in now. Okay, well, if we're measuring when is the biggest flow of aid, and that's like a feather in your cap that, hey, more aid's getting in and you get credit for that. Okay. Also, the least amount of aid was getting in during the Trump presidency, right? The entire 3-month complete starvation blockade where Smotrich publicly said not one grain of wheat will get into Gaza, and he was right, it didn't. That was under Trump, funded by Trump, fully supported by Trump. And J.D. Vance. And then, of course, they're yelling about killing kids. And he's like, we're killing kids in Iran right now. Only Iran and funding them being killed in Lebanon. But in Gaza, we're not killing them right now. I mean, this is, you know, just a touch of death.
I mean, once again, tragic but funny, the non sequitur of, well, we're taking it seriously. You can take things seriously and be so serious you want to kill kids. It's not really much of a variable here to look at the situation. And no, I think Israel bombed like a school in Lebanon yesterday. And your starting point is, no, we're taking this seriously.
Yo, I remember there was this one time, Rob, where you came over to my house. And, you know, I was down in the basement and you came down, you opened the basement door, and you had this look of horror on your face because you saw I was just hacking up children, all these children that I had in my basement. I was killing all of them. And you said, Dave, what are you doing? You're killing these children. And I looked back at you and I went, Rob, I'm taking this very seriously. And I remember you had a look like, good enough for me, you know? And we went back upstairs, and then we went off to go do our gig in Chicago this week. Like, yeah, what is this? What is the show? We're taking it seriously. Okay. But, you know, to the let's go to the Ben Shapiro clip next, because just to set this one up, because this is what a disaster this is for JD Vance, right? This really illustrates my point. So while being there, I guess at one point someone asked him, like, what podcast would you recommend for young people? Which is kind of an interesting question to get asked at Turning Point USA. And, like, he can't say Tucker Carlson, right? He can't say Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Alex Jones, or Megyn Kelly. He can't say any of those because Donald Trump just trashed all of those guys. And, oh my God, could you imagine if JD Vance came out and promoted one of the people who Trump just trashed? Who, by the way, if you go listen to their show, all you're going to hear is them just destroying the administration every day. So it can't. And so he came up with, like, a list. I don't remember everyone that was on his list, but one of them was Theo Vaughn. Okay. So JD was like, dude, what's the way that I could, like, diplomatically get out of this? Hey, Theo Vaughn. And pretty much everyone at Turning Point USA is like, all right, everyone does like Theo Vaughn, right? Because, like, what? No one's, listen, that's not going to offend. Who doesn't like Theo Vaughn? He's the most likable human being I've ever met in my life. He's literally just impossible to hate. And so, like, if you came to anyone in my circle, me or you, and you were like, Theo Vaughn's a great video film. Yeah, Theo Vaughn's great, man. Great show to check out, blah, blah, blah.
However,
that's actually a major problem. So here is Ben Shapiro.
Before you even go to Ben Shapiro, however, if you're the Vice President of the United States of America and people are going, where can we go for unbiased opinions?
Yes, where can
we actually be informed? And your answer is Theo Vaughn. I enjoy Theo Vaughn's podcast. Theo Vaughn is a great broadcaster, a funny comic. You should not be getting your news policy analysis from the Theo Vaughn show. That's not the core of what he does over there.
It's better.
That's not what.
Better than Ben Shapiro, but I mean, yes, sure.
That's not what the show is. That's, in other words, hey, bury your head is in the sand and don't actually pay attention to politics because the people that are covering it are bashing us. And the other ones are such propaganda. I feel bad endorsing that you go listen to Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro. So it's a ridiculous non-answer.
Yes, but I get what you're saying, but I think a big part of the thing here is that it's like, look, he can't say Mark Levin or Ben Shapiro either, because if he said either of their names, he'd probably draw boos. Now, I'm not saying there might be some of them there who like them, but not as many as would be booing. There'd be a good chunk of that crowd would just be booing if he said that. And also that would really just be destroying a huge part of his base. And so Theo almost feels like the one where, like, I guess I could get away with that, you know? Like, to your point, it is kind of crazy that the vice president wouldn't be recommending a podcast that was, like, politically more substantive on a regular basis than Theo Vaughn, who's a comedian and does a comedy podcast. And by the way, when Theo Vaughn talks about politics, it's also not going to look very good for this administration. It's kind of, you know, anyway. So here is Ben Shapiro responding to JD Vance.
And Theo Vaughn is basically just a Bernie Sanders leftist who does not like the censorious impulses of the left and engages in all the same conspiracy theories. And of course, is good friends with Candace Owens and all the rest of it. And that's the guy that the vice president thinks that everybody should listen to. Now, listen, maybe the vice president thinks he has to kiss Theo Vaughn's half-retarded ass in order to keep him in the coalition. And that's his political calculation. I think it's a bad political calculation. There is no politician who is fully capable of just picking up a prior president's coalition and then just carrying it forward. It didn't work for Hillary Clinton with Barack Obama. It's not going to work for J.D. Vance with Donald Trump. Just because Theo Vaughn and Joe Rogan back Trump doesn't mean that they're going to get behind Donald Trump. They're going to get behind J.D. Vance. The reality is that the vice president's current coalitional strategy, I think, is deeply flawed. It is hard for me to see how he doesn't shrink President Trump's coalition across the board. But that's a political calculation. Maybe his is better than mine. It is certainly not a moral calculation.
Okay. So, look, the point here is not whatever nonsense Ben Shapiro is spewing. And of course, Ben Shapiro goes, look, I guess I would say I agree with Ben Shapiro in the sense that, like, yeah, this is not a strategy that's going to work to keep that coalition together. What Ben Shapiro leaves out is that the coalition's already shrunk. It's gone. There is no coalition. And in fact, I think you could pick back up a previous coalition. Like, even he uses the example of Hillary Clinton, and it's like, yeah, but Hillary Clinton kind of did. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote in 2016. She did, for the most part, carry most of Obama's coalition. She lost part of it because she didn't have the appeal that Obama had. A big part of that was not being a war hawk, a guy who was against the war in Iraq and stuff like that. But the point here is that the Israel lobby, even though it knows it's losing, they demand 100% loyalty to them. Like, you can't even say Theo Vaughn, because you know what? Theo Vaughn doesn't support Israel. Plus, imagine this crime. He's friends with Candace Owens. You can't even support, if you support someone who's friends with Candace Owens, who's a comedian, who's like in a different lane, that's still too far for them. So anyway, just the broader point, I guess, that I was making here is just like, dude, how bad is this for J.D. Vance? From one end, okay, how does like the young people who are against the warfare state, how do they feel about J.D. Vance? They're screaming, you're a baby murderer at him, okay? And then how does Ben Shapiro feel about you? You love Candace Owens and Theo Vaughn. Like, in a sense, Ben Shapiro is right about that, that you're just pissing off everyone here. This, I don't know, this is a non-starter. What do you think?
Well, J.D. Vance isn't much of a charismatic winner. A big weirdo, and he's trying to walk the fence, and so look, he's getting criticized by everybody.
Yeah. Well, you just at this point, like, you kind of, I just think you can't deny that essentially there's, you know, you got to pick sides here. This is something that is everybody else has, right? Like, even Trump picked his sides. Trump picked Mark Levin. Like, he hasn't been ambiguous about it. But so I just don't see how JD can play in here and say, like, everyone, Tucker, Candace, Megan, you know, everybody's picked sides, including Ben Shapiro, obviously. I just don't see how you're going to get away with not doing that. And that does seem to be his strategy, because really it's his only strategy. Because the thing is, picking the Israel lobby and the war hawk side is a guarantee that you can't win. No one can win running on that. That's why Trump didn't run on that. But no one can win running on that. And so he knows that's death, but he's also not allowed to go against the administration. So he's really in an impossible situation. I do not envy J.D. Vance. Okay, what was the you know what, maybe you want to play that here. Let's go to the last Ben Shapiro video. This was crazy, dude. He spoke at I don't know, what is YAF, Young Americans Freedom something? I don't know. I know Young Americans for Liberty. I like them a lot more. I believe I'm speaking there this year at
Orlando
big events. I'm not sure if it's back in Orlando. I feel like it was somewhere different this year. I can't remember. But I'm pretty sure, I'd have to go double check. I'm pretty sure I was able to do it. But anyway, yeah, this is, it says, to make America great again, we need high IQ conservatism. So this is Ben Shapiro's attempt to rewrite or kind of rebrand the divide here. He's not going with woke right or whatever, or interventionist versus non-interventionist. No. Everyone who doesn't agree with Ben Shapiro is low IQ. Ben Shapiro is the smart one. Everyone who agrees with me is smart. Everyone who disagrees with me is dumb. This is his attempt at branding. But here, let's play a little bit of this, because I don't know. I actually thought this was pretty hilarious.
Patriotism is rooted in evidence and tradition. It is rooted in basic principle and truth. It is rooted in both freedom and virtue. Low IQ grievance politics is rooted in opposition to all of those things. But it is fair to say that low IQ grievance politics seems to be increasingly winning the day. Why? Well, because envy lives in every single human heart. And the moment it finds justification and people willing to give it air, it seeks to exploit that. Every person has to fight the low IQ person inside them. We all have this part of us that wakes up in the morning and has to make the decision whether to go out and forge forth
here, pause
and take
it.
Control
pause
of our lives and our destiny.
The Young Americans Foundation. So this is just, I mean, this is what he's going to go with to try to win it. But I did find, by the way, Rob, the most interesting comment in all of that nonsense to me, just in the middle of this, it just complete, I mean, it's like straw man went out the window a long time ago. Here, I'll explain the argument to you here. We like truth and virtue and freedom, and they like death and destruction and hate all, you know, truth. Or what? Oh, okay. Yeah. But did you notice in there, he goes, now, you might think that low IQ conservatism is winning. It's like they always have their own little admit. And why? Because it's so stupid. That's why it's winning. That's why we're all terrified to debate any of them, because they're so stupid that they're winning. Like, all right, that's what you're going with here. I mean, and I just, I don't know. I always had, you know, I've had my wins and my losses in life. But even, you know, I we were talking about the Libertarian Party earlier, but I remember when when we were about to take over the Libertarian Party, like that year. So this was like, what, I think in 22, we took over the party, if I'm getting that correctly. So this was like in 2021, that year leading up to it, where like all the resistance people to the Mises Caucus, we used to call them the Loser Brigade and all that, like they'd be arguing with us on Twitter and we'd just be like ratioing the shit out of them. Like, You get a tweet, you know, I'd post a tweet and Andy Craig or some guy would, and he'd get like 12 likes and I'd get 4,000 likes. And it was like, yeah, we're going to take over your whole party. And they would all go with supreme confidence. Like they'd all go, Twitter isn't real life. You know, Twitter isn't real life. And then at the national convention, we won every single seats with super majorities. Like we took 80% of the vote the entire time. And I just, now I'd watch after I stepped down and after we weren't really as involved in the party and all that stuff, I'd watch going into 24 and I'd see like on social media where like the different factions would be fighting and the ratio would be pretty even. And I remember talking to Michael Heisen, I go, there's a big problem, dude. It looks like the Mises Caucus may not win. And I just don't understand why, like, people have this habit of, like if you were Andy Craig or whoever the guy who was opposing me back then, and you were like, you're about to lose this election coming up, and you got 12 likes and the other guy got 4,000, you think you might go, ah, shit, we're gonna lose. But they just delude themselves into still. So there, it is something interesting to me here where Ben Shapiro kind of admits, like, yeah, look, we're losing. But that's only, we're losing to the dumb guys, but that's only because of how dumb they are. Like, geez, man, when you're losing, that's the moment where you're supposed to go, hey, we got to reevaluate, you know, we got to take a look at what we could be doing better. We got to think about what are the strengths of the people who are beating us. This isn't the moment where you just convince yourself that it's because you're so smart and so right about everything. Also, Rob, on some human level, just how much of a turnoff is this?
Well, also, maybe this is my autism, but he's actually not contending with the variation between low and high IQ. He's actually making a low IQ argument here. The high IQ, low IQ talk is basically calling people out for being so stupid that their analysis is low IQ, that they're not actually understanding the situation. To give into your base urges and decide, I guess that's where he's going here. For example, when I think I should get work done and then decide to eat donuts instead, that's not a low IQ analysis. Yeah. That's giving into a baser urge. It's not a low IQ instinct inside of me. And yeah, he's now trying to
IQ actually
he's
is.
Now trying to re-explain high IQ, low IQ, like what these people are doing is wrong. I guess they're grifting for views. They're going into conspiracy theory. You're not actually contending with a high IQ, low IQ. You're making a low IQ argument right here.
Yeah, that's right. No,
which is not actually understanding what high IQ means. Hey, you're lower IQ than me, and I'm calling you out for the stupidity of your arguments because you don't actually understand what's happening here. Or I can call you out for being dishonest that you're actually high IQ and you don't even believe what you're saying, which is what Ben Shapiro is, because you're lying because you don't actually believe what you're saying and you just want to defend Israel. And so you're a liar. You're a grifter.
Yeah. Yeah. Here, let's keep playing. Absolutely. Spot on. Here, let's keep playing.
And make good decisions and look in the mirror when we have a problem, or whether we choose to tear down all of the systems that we have been given. High IQ conservatism does have the antidote to this, however, and that antidote is very simple: gratitude for that which we have been given. High IQ conservatism will win the day when Americans recognize inestimable bounty that we've been
given. Yeah, it's like for Ben Shapiro, like, with your very, very high IQ, I mean, my God, your intelligence is just so intimidating. But That would be a really good point. That would be an excellent point if, like, we had ever come out and said, you know what we're against, Rob? Gratitude. Gratitude's bad.
No, you don't understand.
We are anti-grat. Who has ever, Candace or Tucker, who's ever come out against gratitude? What are you even talking about? But why is it a high IQ activity to pursue to just pretend your opponent said something that nobody has ever said and then argue against that?
I think you're showcasing your lack of understanding of gratitude, and that you don't have gratitude for such a strong military that's willing to take all of our money and spend it overseas and willing to support our most local partner when it kills off the civilian population of the people it has in containment areas. So you just don't understand gratitude. I mean, if we just had more gratitude for our government and stopped criticizing our government, then they could do more of the activities that we don't enjoy. And then we could show gratitude for our government of spending more of our money on things that we don't want. That's the way gratitude's supposed to work, according to Ben Shapiro, high IQ argument. If there's things that you don't like about your government and completely go against your morality or completely go against your concept of what we can afford to spend as a country, criticizing it shows your ingratitude for government taking your money, lying to you, and spending it on things that you don't want. High IQ argument from Ben Shapiro. The criticism is because we just don't have gratitude.
I'm trying to follow what you're saying here, Rob, but this is like quantum physics for me. It's really, it's just really stretching the limits of my intelligence to try to say, but I think the way you said it was making sense. Let me hear a little more from Ben Shapiro. Maybe it'll start to click.
Given a unique country in human history that values free minds and free markets and public virtue and a government capable of defending those values and virtues from both foreign threats and from its own overreach. The reality is that we will have a high IQ country again when we recognize that we stand on the shoulders of our parents and our grandparents, when we stand on the foundations of things that came before us, and when we realize that you can't chip away at the foundations of a republic without collapsing the entire structure. And that requires us to understand.
I got a comment.
Yeah. Sure.
What do you call it? What do you call it when a president lies about a policy agenda, gets into office, is then bribed by donors, and does something against the U.S. public interest? I mean, is that not government corruption? What do you call that? What did he say there? That's why I wanted to pause it earlier. He said government overreach. How is that not government overreach? How is this current Iran war that nobody wants not an example of government overreach? But hey, listen, everyone just has to fall in line, engage in self-censorship, and show gratitude, because that's the only way that the current corrupt system can continue to go. I hate this pleas for self-censorship cuntery of, hey, it's your own ingratitude. Like, this is cult shit. Oh, well, if you're criticizing, you're just not gracious.
Yeah, and you're chipping away at the republic or something like that. Like, even like these things, he goes, we stand for free markets. You're chipping away at the republic. Motherfucker, we don't have a free market. We don't have a republic. What world are you living in? We have a socialist world empire. What do you think this is? Donald Trump is the biggest spender in governmental history. He presides over a bigger government than Stalin did. Like, what world are you living in here? And to say, I'm chipping away at the republic, it's like, well, that's the whole argument now, isn't it? You know, I had this, the whole argument is, people do this a lot, where they do, it's a very, actually, believe it or not, Rob, it's a low IQ tactic to presume the conclusion of an argument and then start the argument there. So what you're doing chips away at the Republic. Well, from our perspective, this policy chips away at the Republic, right? So like there is no Republic, but whatever. Like, so no, that's the whole argument then. Like I was trying to explain this to Ted Cruz's guy. What's his name? Ben, whoever. I debated on Piers Morgan the other day. So he goes, because he says the thing again. He goes, if you say your governments are terrorists, then you hate the country. And I go, okay, Ben. So let me ask you a question. Let's say real terrorists took over our government, like something you would consider terrorists, right? It's the Nazis took over our government or something like that. Al-Qaeda took over our government. And I called out our government for being terrorists. Would that mean I hate our country? And he goes, so you're, again, this is the lowest IQ shit ever. He goes, so you're saying our government is the same as Al-Qaeda? I go, no, it's a logical analogy. And I'm going, so if there's, if that did happen and I called them out, would that mean I hate America? And he goes, no, because you'd be calling them out based on facts. And it's like, right. So that's the argument. Do I have the facts or not? You can't presume the conclusion, which is that I must hate my country because our government isn't really terrorist, when my claim is that they are terrorists. That's the battle. Let's fight over that. Who's right or wrong on the issue? Now, if I can prove it, then it doesn't mean I hate the country. It might mean I love the country, because wouldn't you want to call that out if you really loved your country? And so all of this, Ben Shapiro is just doing the same thing. He is, ironically, invoking the lowest IQ arguments, saying absolutely nothing of substance about all of the people who he runs in fear from ever having a conversation with. Like, because you can't, what you notice in there is there's not even an attempt to go, here's why we needed to fight the war in Iran. Here's why we need to support Israel. Here's why it's anti-Semitic to be against either of those things. Because he doesn't actually have an argument for any of that. So it's just, we're for gratitude and truth and liberty and awesomeness and America. And they're for grievance and pulling things down. And okay. You know, for somebody who says that all of his opponents are wrapped up in grievance culture, Ben Shapiro sure does seem to have a pretty big grievance about that. Right? Is it fair to state that Ben Shapiro has some grievances with Candace Owens? Yeah, dude, all of politics is about grievances. No one would ever be involved in politics if they didn't have a grievance of some sort. If you have no grievance, then you stay home. You got no issue. Even just voting is an act of having a grievance in some sense, right? It's all just ridiculous. All right, let's get out of here, Rob. We got a plane to catch to Chicago. I booked us a hotel, so we're not going to sleep on the street. So that's
beautiful.
Cool.
That's a good starting point.
So it's already a pretty good weekend. All right. Catch you guys on Monday. Thanks for listening. Thank you so much for subscribing. Really do appreciate that. All right. Have a good one. Peace.